regulated.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
This podcast focuses on regulatory and corporate developments in highly regulated spaces. I'm Christian Bax, and I used to regulate medical marijuana.
I'm Tony Glover, and I used to regulate alcoholic beverages and casino gambling. Now together, we're regulating.
Welcome back to another week of Regulated. Tony, how are you this week?
I'm doing great, Bax. How are you?
I'm doing really well. I had one of the greatest experiences of my adult life this past week. I had this thing, right, where 2 years ago, I had this little pain point that started in my foot. And I was dating this girl who was a physician's assistant at the time. She's like, you've got plantar fasciitis, no big deal. So I go to a doctor, have it checked out for like 2 years. I've got this thing that's just killing me in my foot. I go for a walk on the beach when I'm visiting my girlfriend. She's working in Pensacola right now. It starts raining on me. So I get caught in the rain. My feet get completely torn up because I'm running for miles on the sand to get out of this rain. And it tears up the bottom of my feet. I get home. I look at the pain point, right? It's like an asteroid crater. And there's like a freaking chunk of glass that's been sitting in there for 2 years. I pull it out. I've never had a greater feeling in my life than 15 minutes later after I pulled out this huge piece of glass that's been embedded in my foot since I was working for the state of Florida. And it's the greatest thing that's happened to me. It's just the pain free. I can like walk like a normal person. It's indescribably great. It was a wonderful week, Tony.
Well, first off, that's just the story of any regulator who leaves for the private sector. It feels like a piece of glass has been embedded in your foot for years. So congratulations, you're officially in the private sector.
It was the last vestige of my state employment, was that chunk of glass that's been stuck in my body. So we're going to tackle one of the hottest stories in American regulatory law, and that's vaping and the public health issues that we've seen come out over the last couple months, specifically with Juul and e-cigarettes, and then related stories with cannabis-related product.
There's been an absolute firestorm in the vaping industry since the first vaping-related death back on August 23rd. So let's take a look at the state of play according to the CDC's release on September 26th. So there have already been 805 cases of lung injury reported. I mean, that's from 46 states and one territory. And we're sitting at 12 deaths already from 10 states. Those are confirmed deaths that are considered to be related to this vaping crisis.
Yeah. And when you look even deeper into those statistics, and I pulled these numbers from a tweet from Samantha Gross that I saw right before we came on the show. So shout out to her. She has took a relatively recently a job down with the Miami Herald. I mean, she's a really, really good follow for cannabis news,
right?
And other regulatory news. But anyway, so the tweet that she posted had a breakdown on some of those stats. And incredibly, so 3/4 of the patients who have suffered some type of harm in the CDC reporting are male, and only 17% are 35 years or older, which is crazy because 55% of the U.S. population is over 35. So this is a public health issue that is skewing very, very young. And you're seeing 67% of patients that the CDC is reporting for this particular issue are 18 to 34, and over 15% are under 18. So that kind of gives you an idea of the patient pool that we're talking about here.
Yeah, the one good thing is because there are two separate vaping issues happening right now. There's the underage epidemic, so-called epidemic involving e-cigarettes. And then there's this new vaping crisis that we're talking about that's involving lung injury. And it is interesting that given the hype on the former, you would actually think that more of these cases would involve the under 18 age range. But it is interesting to know what percentage is under 35. Yeah, the stats behind this crisis are very interesting and in-depth.
Right. And I think it's to be expected in the sense that e-cigarettes and vaping are a new phenomenon. And it's a huge industry, absolutely gigantic. And Juul has been one of the largest, fastest growing, most, you know, popular company. They're essentially a Uber or like a WeWork, except for consuming nicotine. And as this business has blown up, it's obviously marketed. One of the criticisms is the marketing is skewing younger, and a lot of young people are picking up the habit of consuming nicotine through these e-cigarettes. Specifically, there's, Tony, and we're going to cover this, it's been an issue with flavored e-cigarettes that appeal to young people.
Well, it's interesting to look again at the CDC data, because all of the reported cases right now have a history of e-cigarette use or vaping. But most of them reported using e-cigarette products containing THC. And we'll get into this, but there's been a lot of conjecture from the vaping industry that the likely cause of this is black market counterfeit vaping products. And so we're going to see. But here's, you know, getting to that point, here's what we don't know. The specific cause of these lung injuries, according to the CDC, their investigation has not identified any specific e-cigarette or vaping product or substance that's linked to all the cases. So, you know, it sounds like the specific cause is probably going to be an ingredient or a type, a class of ingredients that were additives that were added to certain products. And so there's going to be I have to imagine the CDC investigation is going to be looking very closely at black market sort of distribution rings, et cetera.
Yeah, CDC and I would imagine Congress and the FDA and personal injury attorneys all over the country. I mean, this is the tip of the iceberg, something we're going to be following very closely. Tony and I are going to be touching on two particular stories that we've read over the last week that we think illustrate the gravity of the situation and some of the waves that it's created from a public health perspective all across the country.
Right. I think this September 25th piece from Chris Isidore at CNN sums up kind of what a mess this all is. And I'll just jump into the reporting. The CEO of Juul is out, as a growing number of vaping-related deaths and threats of federal regulation present a monumental challenge for the e-cigarette company. Juul announced that CEO Kevin Burns will be replaced by the chief growth officer at tobacco company Altria, which is a major investor in Juul. It will also suspend all TV, print, and digital ads and will stop some of its lobbying efforts. Just a quick editorial here. Let's be careful with stopping the lobbying. Okay.
Let's interject right there, because this is tremendously important. Think about that. Juul has been a quickly growing company, but they are a monster right now in the sense of how big they are. And there's a Wells Fargo report that basically values the company at about $38 billion, which easily makes it one of the largest, you know, tobacco nicotine related company, not just in the United States and in the world. And the fact that they are stopping advertising and stopping lobbying, I mean, they're essentially, their public face is going dark while the ramifications of this public health issue are developing.
Jumping back into the story, the company said it will comply with any new federal policy relating to vaping products. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration is weighing regulations to ban all flavored e-cigarettes, which are, as Christian mentioned, they're considered attractive to young users. Several states are moving to ban e-cigarettes altogether. And Walmart, which is, of course, the nation's largest retailer, announced that it would no longer sell vaping products. That's a lot of hits. That's a lot of tough information from an industry perspective. But what really jumps out to you, Christian?
The first thing that jumps out to me is that there's very clearly a shakeup happening at Juul. And if you read the quotes from the CEO, there does seem to be some worry there in that they were riding this high. When you are watching some of the coverage of this story, one of an ancillary story that doesn't really get talked a lot about is the reporting that Philip Morris and Altria have ended merger talks in the wake of this public health issue with vaping. And just to put it in context, I think it's very unlikely that you're listening to this show and you don't know what Juul is. And the reason is because Juul isn't just to vaping what Coke is to soda, Juul is basically what Kleenex is to tissue paper. Its name is basically synonymous with vaping. Its name is like Google in the sense that it's been turned into a verb. And so when you see this much flux at an industry leader, it tells me that there are ripples that are moving through the entire industry.
Right. But I do have to say, I think what you said kind of might shed some light on their strategy here, which seems like, you know, they're putting their head in the turtle shell and waiting for things to pass. But that may be because of their, you know, they must have extreme confidence in one, their market position, and two, their product. So their game plan may be here. You know, perhaps we did something a little wrong. Perhaps we didn't. Either way, there's going to be consequences, but let's survive those consequences and come out on the other side stronger and still be a market leader and continue to be a verb in terms of vaping.
Here's where I think that they have a problem. As you very astutely pointed out, there's two public health issues that are in play right now. There's the spate of acute illnesses, specifically lipoid pneumonia, which is pneumonia. It's a rare condition that's basically caused when fat particles into your lungs, it causes inflammation. There have been people who have died. There's a lot of people who have gotten sick, but there's this other issue of an extremely high prevalence and spike in youth use of e-cigarettes when we have experienced a 2-decade decline in youth use of tobacco. And one of the really interesting things being a person who grew up in the 90s and watched that truth movement that was on television, you know, where there were all of these hip ads trying to curb cigarette use. And then those transformed into very graphic, disturbing ads with like people who have had their jaws removed, their larynx is cut out because of cancer. And now we've seen this pendulum swing back the other way where youth use is rising and public health officials are not happy. So if you see Scott Gottlieb talk about this, who is the commissioner of the FDA for the past few years and recently left, he's railing against e-cigarettes and this public health trend for youth use. And so what I think is going to be unfortunate for Juul and for these e-cigarette companies is a lot of public health officials, when they're talking about this issue, are clear that although they're not sure about where the harms are coming from, it doesn't seem like they're coming from the legal companies that have the developed supply chains. It's coming from illicit use, but it's drawing policymakers' attention to this issue of, wait, these guys are going to high schools and they're talking about the benefits of Juuling over cigarettes. These guys are marketing flavored tobacco vaping oils. Like, this seems like it's a problem. This seems like it may be big tobacco 2.0. And that's where I think the risk is that they're going to come down on this second issue that wasn't the immediate hit of people in hospitals.
Right. Well, look, you saw it clearly. You know, I mentioned the White House earlier. They came out and made a very strong statement about e-cigarette use. But it was clear from the timing of their statement and the fact that the president himself made a statement from, I believe it was the Oval Office. I mean, this is a high priority statement and a significant use of time in light of the circumstances from the White House, right? But based on the timing of that statement, it was clear that it was related to the vaping health crisis and not the teen use epidemic, right? So we're dealing with two tracks, but they're starting to overlap, at least in, like Christian, like you said, in the minds of the regulators and in the, you know, looking at the results of their actions.
Right.
But, you know, my analysis of this is I'm going to have to defer to the public health experts, but it seems really likely that this is black market counterfeit THC cartridge stuff. Those black market, right. You know, the shady bartender at the sports bar vape carts are very dodgy. They're known to be counterfeit. Amazon.com recently had to pull off essentially tools to counterfeit, to start a counterfeit vape cartridge operation. They had to pull those off of the marketplace, right? I mean, this is something that's out there. So it seems the other piece of this, though, you know, it seems likely to me, and what do I know, but it seems likely that the work of federal government policymakers, both executive and legislative, are going to slow down over the next few months, probably through Christmas, January, for whatever reason. So there's a real chance here, because the CDC is taking this very seriously, along with state public health officials. There's a real chance that the medical mystery here is solved in a way that really focuses regulators on policing those black market illegal vape cartridges. And also, I think they're going to start taking a look at legitimate producers who are, quote unquote, losing product. But I think that that, quote unquote, lost product, perhaps out of the gray market in California, is certainly less likely to be harmful. But still, it's contributing to the problem, because there's a perception that you can get legitimate California vape cartridges on the black market in Florida and across the East Coast. Well, Christian, speaking of legitimate marijuana vape producers, you have a story from New York. Could you break it down?
Yeah, so the New York Post, among a lot of other media outlets, are reporting about the short-term dive in the sales for legitimate marijuana vape cartridges. Now, vaping is one of, if not the most popular form of consumption for cannabis. This is quite important for the cannabis industry today. According to New York Post, vaping products now represent one third of the U.S. legal cannabis industry, which is worth about $9.6 billion in sales between 2017 and 2019, according to New Frontier data. This has been especially pronounced in Oregon, which saw a fair amount of people who were impacted from, you know, pneumonia and some other conditions that we referenced in Tony's story. And Oregon's seen a 62% drop in market share for vapes. This is really important from the licit cannabis industry, so the legal market, because it doesn't seem like they're the culprits here, but they're experiencing some of the blowback from this larger issue. And so it seems to have spooked everyone who was generally thinking about either vaping nicotine, vaping cannabis. Some people are, you know, consuming vape carts that have both. And when you look at this, there's some very important ramifications, right? So from a market perspective, just generally from a meta sense, cannabis companies, public cannabis companies, have been trading relatively low in recent months. And that's very important, because a lot of multi-state operators that are public use their shares, kind of like Blockbuster did, to roll other companies up. So they'll approach a licensee in state X and say, we would like to buy you. Here is a few million dollars up front, and then we'll give you the rest in stock, which is at this valuation. If the valuation,
yeah, right, here's a Lexus sedan full of stock certificates.
Right. And that can be a very effective tool, because it allows that's why companies go public, because they have this war chest of stock that they can use for liquidity to go out and execute transactions. When your share price is low, it limits your resources in order to go out and expand your business. And the cannabis industry just got really good news this week, in the sense that the U.S. House voted favorably on very important banking reform for the cannabis industry. But then you have this countervailing force right here with vaping, and that may also have negative ramifications that could mitigate some of that benefit that they've seen this week. The second thing that's really important is, I think that this is going to be in the long term, beneficial to the legal cannabis market, in the sense that this is a hammer that their lobbyists and that their attorneys and their advocates for the legal market can use when they're talking to regulators to aggressively pursue a legal market. Because one of the things, just having regulated cannabis, the difficulty when you talk to police officers, you talk to law enforcement and district attorneys, you can go and you can tell them this illegal activity, there's drug trafficking happening here. We have evidence that drug trafficking is here. Can we get an arrest or a prosecution on this? And basically, even if it's a fairly large scale event, there's really no emphasis from a lot of law enforcement to go after that, because there's a perception publicly that cannabis just really isn't that harmful. And I think that that's been part of the development, the evolution of the public awareness of cannabis. And that's just where we are today, where there's a de-emphasis and enforcement of cannabis prohibition. That said, the large scale distribution of illegal marijuana products in the black market is a very real thing. And when you break it down from a dollars and cents perspective, it's bad for the bottom line for a legal market to be competing against a black market that don't have to pay for the regulatory compliance and the public safety issues that a regulated marijuana company does.
Well, let's talk about this, because your takeaways are I think really on point, and I think they're interconnected, right? You mentioned that some of the multi-state operators are trading at relatively low numbers on the public markets. We've mentioned that we don't think that marijuana, you know, legitimate marijuana vape producers, licensed producers, are going to end up being culpable for the vaping crisis. So what we're seeing is over the next 3 or 4 months, you may see two things happen. One, the legitimate marijuana producers, licensed producers, get a complete clean bill of health from federal regulators and from state regulators on this. Two, those same state and federal regulators start a very aggressive criminal investigation nationwide approach to take down illicit THC cartridge producers, also known as eliminating the competition for the legal producers, right? I'm not an investment advisor, but I am going to call mine. That's what it sounds like. What you're saying is that there may be some undervalued assets out there.
Yeah, that's probably true. I think that generally my perspective in the long term is that cannabis is generally going to move towards federal legalization, and you're going to have things like interstate commerce, and that the bones of the industry are only going to get stronger. And the winners, if you are successful at picking who the winners are going to be of large scale consolidation, you're going to make money in the long term. I wish I had a crystal ball and could tell you. But to your point with the criminal issues, that also runs directly counter to another movement that's been part of the cannabis legalization trend, and that's been decriminalization. That's been local governments and some states decriminalizing possession and other nonviolent cannabis related crimes. And in that wake, you've seen a large scale effort to expunge crimes that were for possession or other nonviolent marijuana related drug crimes. Here, though, you're going to see an emphasis on people who want to prosecute people who are offenders. But what is their crime? Their crime is ultimately the possession and sale of this illegal marijuana product. So you either are going to have to charge them with a new crime or a crime that's basically related to counterfeiting an existing product or violating the existing marijuana regulatory structure. You're going to have to charge them with possession and sale of the Schedule I substance, which is going to be extremely messy and complicated to kind of go against the quickly moving wave of decriminalization for cannabis related crimes, specifically in large scale medical and recreational marijuana states.
Well, Christian, as we sit back and kind of look at all these different factors affecting the industry and affecting consumers out there, what's your big takeaway from all of this?
The moral to the story, at least as far as cannabis is concerned, is do not buy illegal, unregulated cannabis right. products. Just do not do it. You should never, especially if you're a medical patient. I'm not a doctor, but I'm going to give you some free medical advice. Never, ever, ever buy medical products for yourself from a gas station. The problems related to THC vape carp seem to be related to cutting agents that are added to illegal vape cartridges, specifically vitamin E related products, and cutting agents. And you should be consuming cannabis, if you're going to consume cannabis, from a licensed cannabis provider in Florida, an MMTC. So these companies have heavily regulated supply chains. They have quality control measures in place. They have very real skin in the game, very real risk if they're causing a public health issue. And so even though we're still learning about what the causes of this are, they are your safe alternative. They are kind of your harbor in the storm for for this problem from a public health perspective. So bringing it back, if you are in a regulated state, go to a licensed entity. Do not risk using vape cartridges that you have bought from the black market. It's just not worth it to your health.
Right. And I'd even go a step further. And, you know, we both live in Florida. We both live in North Florida. And just this week, we saw the city of Jacksonville refuse to decriminalize marijuana on the basis that it's similar to fentanyl. Right. And I'm not going to spend any time addressing how ridiculous that comparison is. I think everybody listening knows it's ridiculous. But I would extend it further, not from a health perspective, but perhaps from a social justice perspective. If you're a medical patient, especially, and you're still even purchasing flour on the street, I would strongly consider, I would strongly recommend for you to procure all of your products from licensed facilities within the state, because God forbid you're in a jurisdiction that hasn't woken up and realized that it's 2019 and is still sending police officers to arrest people with small amounts of marijuana. So there's really no reason to operate outside of the medical system in Florida unless you just straight up don't qualify. But if you qualify for a medical marijuana card, you should not be involved in illicit black market transactions, in my opinion.
Just I want to touch on that one more point before we kind of close out, because you bring up a great point in the sense that, you know, we talked offline a little bit about this issue before we started recording. And, you know, we tell people in our private lives, there are very real risks. They should not be consuming black market stuff. And we do that not to be prudes and not to, you know, obviously we don't want our friends and family arrested, but we also do it because we've seen too much. We know that there are bad actors out there, and you want to protect your loved ones from that. And so beyond vape cartridges, and this can be a whole other show, but there are things like just egregious use of very toxic pesticides that are used by, you know, cartels, used by illegal growers, because they don't have the same regulatory standards that licensed marijuana companies do, that are extremely harmful to you if you smoke it, and can be even more harmful if you learn more about the science of concentration, when you're pulling out cannabinoids out of a plant in order to put into a vape cartridge or an edible or a tincture. Sometimes you're pulling out other things and you're concentrating those other things. And so you're getting dosed with very heavy levels of, you know, fungicides, pesticides, insecticides from these illicit products. So just across the board, vape cartridges are the story du jour, but don't be lulled into the sense that there are no health risks from buying and consuming illegal black market cannabis. That's just kind of my soapbox moment for the day. It's just not worth it when you have a regulated stream of commerce that you can go to with some assurances of safety.
Right. I mean, I'll use the analogy, you know, I live near a Publix, walking distance from a Publix. I would never buy a off the street Diet Coke, like a fake counter a Diet Coke from like my neighbor. He's like, hey bro, you don't understand my syrup mixture. My Red 40 is really good. The aspartame is incredible.
Right. I bought this can. This can was manufactured with only small amounts of lead from Shenzhen, China. And then it was bottled and processed for all cash with a pallet of 30,000 of these cans and sodas, and then sold to you illegally for cash. Like, you wouldn't do that with any other product.
The only product where this type of distribution method might be even feasible for most Americans is when you're buying like a cheap remote control toy for your baby child. That's the only scenario where you would get something with such a shady manufacturing history, is when it's a meaningless toy that poses no safety risk.
Right. And bringing it full circle back to the immediate impacts of regulated businesses. If you are a gas station or a head shop and you are selling some gray market stuff, some stuff that's kind of shady, you are in the stream of commerce. You have civil and potentially criminal liability if and when you sell a dangerous product to a patient who consumes it. You are part of that liability chain. Again, bringing it full circle back to Scott Gottlieb's discussion, you know, he and a lot of other people are bringing up the very real potential issues of civil liability if you are knowingly or even unknowingly selling these illegal products that you should know are potentially dangerous to people. So just don't buy black market stuff. Don't buy sketchy cannabis or cheap knockoff jewel products. Buy the real thing and save yourself some potential health defects. All right, let's lighten up. You want to talk about your shout out of the week, Tony?
Yeah, I can do that. Mine's a little controversial this week.
Ooh.
So, you know, and actually I'm not sure if this is a shout out yet. So we're going to have to take a vote.
Okay.
At the end of this. And you know what? I'm going to abstain so you can decide whether this is a shout out. I was going to say,
there's two of us. How do we break it?
Yeah, right, right. I'm going to abstain for the vote. You can tell me if this is a shout out or a call out. Okay.
Please. I'm so excited. I don't know what this is going to be. In fact, in our show notes, it's a surprise shout out from Tony.
All right. I'm just going to read a press release from July 29, 2019, okay. Washington, D.C. The National Association of Insurance Commissioners, NAIC, announces the launch of its podcast, The Regulators. The monthly podcast features interviews with regulators and focuses on issues facing the industry, both today and in the future. Quote, listeners will get an inside look at key issues facing insurance regulators in the industry, said NAIC CEO Michael F. Considine, who hosts the show. It's also an opportunity for people to understand the unique perspective of insurance regulators as they deal with some of the hottest topics in the insurance industry.
Did they just pull our show description and change everything to insurance?
Yeah, right. My question for you, are we going to congratulate the Regulators podcast and welcome them into the podcasting community? Or are we starting a beef with the regulators?
Oh my gosh. As much as I would love to start a beef with insurance commissioners, no. Let's give them a warm welcome to the podcast community and a good luck, because I will tell you, when we were thinking about this idea, right, we recorded our first couple of prototype podcasts just to see how it would go. I did a lot of research into law and regulated related podcasts and YouTube channels, and there's just not that many. And even though
right.
there are a lot of law firms that have podcasts and a lot of law firms that have YouTube channels, but they're freaking boring. And it's very hyper technical. Now, let me say this. The first job I had was dealing with regulatory issues for insurance companies, right? Insurance, despite its kind of broad umbrella, is extremely interesting. There's like surplus lines insurance where you are actually in the business of insuring weird, unusual things like Jennifer Lopez's butt or A-Rod's, his legs or his hands or whatever he got insured. Super interesting stuff. That said, I am very excited to see how you create a show that keeps them coming back outside of the insurance industry every week.
All right. Well, good. Okay. This is officially a shout out. Shout out to the regulators. We'll retweet them on our @regulatedpod feed. And also maybe we'll reach out to them because there are some interesting emerging issues I know from my relationships with the insurance industry between cannabis operators in emerging insurance lines. So maybe there's an opportunity for us to do a little crossover and kind of talk about both of those issues.
Here's the most important thing I need to know before we decide whether or not they just completely ripped off our show description. Are they using a Warren G sound alike for their intro and outro music? That's because if that's it, that's a slam dunk. And then it is going to turn into a beef if they're using Warren G.
We'll have to find out. They've got a couple episodes up, so I'm looking forward to listening to those.
Unbelievable. Congratulations. If you're into insurance, check them out. I'm sure it'll at the very least be educational. And I wish them very well. Podcasting is one of the most fun things I do all week. I always look forward to it. So, you know, if it's obviously not their full-time job, but if they get joy out of it and people enjoy listening to it, I think it's awesome.
Right, right. Well, let's go to our second shout out, Christian. What do you have?
Shout out to the DeSantis family who announced that they're having their third child on the way. It's really cool. We're going to see a little baby that just developed over the course of his term. Very, very cool news, kind of a rare heartwarming thing that you see in Florida politics. That's just 100% pure happiness. So I thought that was very cool.
Well, I think this is an important transitional time in Florida history, because if you look at Governor DeSantis and you look at Mayor Gillum, even his Democratic opponent in the primary, you're talking about two guys who are at the peak of their respective political parties in Florida, who are basically not that far away from our age, right? I mean, Governor DeSantis is what, 5 or 6 years older than us, and we're in our mid 30s. I'd like to think that we're still relatively young. So I think what this shows, especially, you know, when you look at Chris Sprouse, the speaker designate, when you look at John McIver, the chief judge of the Division of Administrative Hearings, I think what this shows, Christian, is that the young guys are taking over. So it's our time.
Is it, or are we just getting old? Are we just now the old guys? And we're just our fellow old guy peers are taking over at 34. You know what was the super depressing when I was looking at the statistics for the e-cigarette lung issues? And I was looking at demographic data. When I saw that 55% of the U.S. was 35 or older, I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then I was like, 45% of the country is younger than me. When the F did that happen? Congratulations to all those guys. You know, young people in Florida doing some extremely impressive things, and young enough to know what the relevance of Juul is, so they can make some very interesting policy decisions about this issue and many other moving and shaking items in the state. With that, that does it for this week's show of Regulated. Thank you so much for tuning in. Tony and I very much appreciate getting to talk with you and share stories that we find interesting every week. You can find us at regulatedpod.com. You can check us out at Regulated Pod on Twitter. You can also find us at Regulated Pod on Instagram now. And so we're appealing to that under 35 demographic more and more each day. All right, Tony, take us out.
Until next week, please, please, please stay in compliance.
And don't buy gas station CBD.